fighting for America.
Our two priorities for this year are to increase the compensation for teachers. In Wyoming, for instance, beginning teachers make $43,269,000.
Fighting for Idaho.
We have a number of things in place to help keep parents informed. Through our Facebook page, we can post things. We've got a Sky Alert. We've got an instant messenger to keep parents informed of what's actually going on.
Fighting for you.
So when you get all the other stuff out of the way, all the politics and all that, our desire is to prepare kids for what we think is a bright future.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award.
Good morning!
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the Morning, Boise State University. Promoting our school, securing our future. Mary Andrews with us. We're here to talk about the Vista Neighborhood Project. And anytime we can talk about economic development, it's a good thing. We've heard about the microgravity program this morning, the sculpture program, the entrepreneurial college. What is the Vista Neighborhood Project, ma'am?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm glad to be here. Well, first of all, Boise State is Boise's university. And so the city of Boise has initiated program to energize the neighborhoods. And the first pilot project is in the Vista neighborhood. And so the city of Boise approached Boise State to partner and for us to contribute in any way possible.
And what would that be? Usually when people talk about the university, they're thinking of classes and everything else.
Well, one of the wonderful parts about a university, and you've heard about some of the other programs in terms of arts and entrepreneurship, but we also have the expertise of our faculty, and we also have opportunities to do research and involve our students in those kinds of applied experiences. So when we have an opportunity to partner, in this case, with the city of Boise on the Vista Neighborhood Project, we have involved eight faculty on eight different focus areas ranging from crime to housing. And so they're involved lending their expertise, and they will be involving their students as well. And then they'll be looking for opportunities in other areas where Boise State can offer assistance.
So this is really a win-win, if you will. The city gets help from the university. The students get real-life practical experience in solving problems like crime or revitalizing a neighborhood.
That's right. So one of the focus areas is housing, for example. And so we have a faculty member who is currently doing research in the aging population and their housing issues. And so we have a student group right now doing a visual survey of the neighborhood to identify, for example, how many homes may need assistance with maintenance, say a new roof. And it turns out there are programs available and certain financing and grants available to help our neighbors and our neighborhoods. And so if we can have a better understanding through our student research on what the need is on the neighborhood, then we can develop a strategy to help those neighbors become aware of the opportunities for them.
And those grants would be what, like federal grants or something like that, state grants, something like that?
That's right.
Right. So here you could have someone that couldn't afford a new home or maintenance on their home, but they could qualify for a program. And the benefit to the students is they learn about these grants and these federal programs. They get the real-world experience helping real people. I don't know if there's a degree in that, but it seems like a lifetime of experience right there.
Absolutely. So one of the emphasis we have currently at Boise State, among many, is creating applied experiences for students. So the more experiences in terms of internships or paid or unpaid internships, real-world experiences like you were describing, and also performing research, often with industry or in other, whether it be state or federal grant opportunities that we have at Boise State. So the more applied experiences where students can practice their skills, we are encouraging of that, and it's really part of how we are taking education to the next level by including these types of experiences for every student on campus.
Now, how will that, in practical terms, we talked a little bit about it, but how, like, when you graduate, will you use those skills? Is that something you can use as a business person or an entrepreneur? Or, you know, we've heard about all the diverse programs, as you've said here at Boise State. You know, just where can they benefit from that concretely?
What we hear from our industry partners is that every graduate can use those skills on day one. So there's a couple of different areas. One, we understand that students transition better from an academic experience upon graduation into their work experience, wherever that might be, in the field of health sciences, in the field of arts, business, and engineering. So transitioning is step one, and we understand that practicing skills and having the confidence of knowing that they've already gained skills and practiced skills in a real environment benefits them. And then we also know that as they progress through their career, the skills that they learn in terms of critical thinking, for example, communication, collaboration, when they practice those in our environment here at Boise State, they're able to practice those and they're ready to deploy those, and they already have a head start in the workplace. And we understand these are the skills that our employers want.
What's the benefit for the university partnering with industry? How does that work?
It's absolutely critical in a number of different ways. And two I'll talk about. One is on the academic front. So it's very important for us as a university to be listening to what industry needs and wants, not only today but in the future. So actively engaging with industry, and so we value our partners that are willing to invest the time and effort to communicate with us and be engaged in our academic programs. And then the second one that I'm focused on is also being engaged in terms of research. So coming to the university to access maybe lab equipment or expertise that our faculty have to benefit their business is one aspect of it, but also to partner in providing these real experiences that we just spoke about, where industry partners can offer a problem to solve in the classroom setting. And some of those are called, in the College of Engineering, for example, we have what's called senior design. And for the entire senior year of every College of Engineering student, they work on an industry problem and engage with industry as they work through solving that problem. And that's absolutely, as we've talked about, critical skill development.
Finally, the business of Boise State, a young university that continues to grow. Can you take us inside that bubble, if you will? We've been asking a lot of folks that. It's a very unique, but on the other hand, you have, again, a new art building going up, fairly new business building. The history is yet to be written.
That's right. This is, I believe, one of the most exciting places to be right now. And I am energized every day to be here, because this is an environment not only as an employee of Boise State, but I think for our students as well. This is, we can seize opportunities. We're nimble. I think we also heard a prior person say we're hungry.
Right.
And I personally feel like if there's something that where I believe we can make a difference, the university endorses us pursuing that. And so it's really an empowering place to be, I think, for students as well as employees like me.
Well, we appreciate your time. Your neighbor China says hello, by the way.
Hello, China.
Small world. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Kevin Miller at 580-KIDO. It is 813. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We were talking earlier about this HBO special involving Robert Durst. Here is where he admits to murdering three people. Okay, we don't have the sound turned on here. Let's try that again at 580-KIDO. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let's try it again.
There it is. Your court. course. But we can't imagine. What's in the house?
By the way, just an editor's note, never take a live mic into the restroom. And that is from HBO's The Jinx. You heard Durst admit to killing them all. Will he be prosecuted for that? If you missed our interview with Eben Brown, who's been covering that story from the very beginning, you can go to 580kido.com and click on the 7 a.m. podcast. Coming up, we'll go to Rachel Sutherland of Fox News Radio. She'll have the very latest on the Secretary of State, the former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, and her email controversy. By the way, it's never too soon to be talking presidential politics. Here's Scott Walker in New Hampshire.
We believe the vast majority of the rest of us from outside of Washington, which, by the way, I call 68 square miles surrounded by reality. That's what Washington is. The rest of us who live in reality understand we grow the economy in cities and towns and villages all across this great country. This president and his allies tend to measure success in government by how many people are dependent in the government, by how many people are on Medicaid and food stamps and unemployment. We should measure success by just the opposite, by how many people are no longer dependent on the government, right?
There we have it. There we have it. Scott Walker, is he the man to beat in 2016? 817, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. Let's get you to work.
Promote our schools. Secure our future. Brought to you by CapEd Credit Union and Chick-fil-A. Now, back to Kevin Miller at Boise State University on 580KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning, Kevin Miller from Boise State University. We want to thank again CapEd and Chick-fil-A for making this possible. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We're waiting for Rachel Sutherland of Fox News Radio to come aboard. We'll get her thoughts on the latest involving the email controversy from Washington, D.C. Getting back to this Robert Durst thing, if you haven't seen the HBO special, you'll be reading about it all day. Here you have a man from one of the richest families in New York, in the country, accused of murdering three people, basically a six-part miniseries where Mr. Durst went back and forth with producers yapping about his innocence and the perception of him as well. And you take a look at this and you wonder to yourself, why in the world would somebody, anybody with a brain in their head being accused of murdering three people, talk to TV producers? Now, as you heard moments ago, he allegedly admitted to killing all of them. Joining us now with an in-depth discussion on that, or the email controversy, whichever she prefers, Rachel Sutherland, joining us from Fox News Radio. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm more up on the emails, to be honest.
Well, I'm glad somebody is, because depending on who you talk to, you wonder who broke the law and who didn't break the law.
Right. I mean, and law is different than policy. I mean, we've been discussing this for quite some time, especially when it goes back to her years at the State Department. And I think the issue of whether or not she broke the law at that time has been settled, and that she did not. It was against policy at the time, but the law changed in 2014 after she left as far as keeping a private email address. Okay, that all behind us. Now we have this issue of her private server and emails being deleted off of that. Personal emails deleted off of her private server, whereas she said that government emails were handed over to the State Department. The question everybody's asking is, who decided whether these were personal or work-related? And now there's talk of Republican Congressman of South Carolina, Trey Gowdy, who heads up the Select Committee on Benghazi. He wants to subpoena that server. Now, I don't know if you can subpoena a server. I guess you could subpoena a ham sandwich if you want to. But I'm not sure, the legal proceedings for getting a server into a third party's hands.
Well, and then you wonder, you know, if the law was broken and you have Senator Paul saying that it was, I know he's a doctor. I don't know if he's a lawyer. You know, what are the ramifications? And in addition to that, you have the former Secretary of State trying to get ahead of this, but perhaps making it worse. And John Stewart having fun with her with this, saying, yeah, it's really tough to have somebody hold one of your devices. And, I kind of like you said, you know, what's a bigger pain, holding two devices or deleting over 30,000 emails?
Right. That is a big pain. You know, one of her spokespeople over the weekend said that it was definitely that a staffer or staffers had gone through all of those 32,000 emails and read them all. I mean, my eyes glaze over at the very thought, but I guess we have to. She says, trust me on this one, so I guess we'll trust her that someone actually read all those emails.
Well, having watched done my homework, because I knew we'd be talking to you, Rachel, here at 580KIDO, having watched Fox News Sunday from the panel, we learned that Mrs. Anthony Weiner, Hillary Clinton's trust aide, actually inquired about whether or not a private server could be used, and she was actually paid not only by the Department of State, but by people lobbying the Clinton Foundation while being employed with the Department of State. So this could have broader ramifications for her staff.
I guess it could, and it's not all that surprising that we've heard that some staff members may have used that private server as well. I mean, why set up a server for just one person? A whole server. So it would kind of make sense. And look, I mean, House Speaker John Boehner is calling for a greater investigation into Hillary Clinton's email practices. We have, as we mentioned here, you know, Trey Gowdy on Fox News Sunday saying that he wants to subpoena that server. This isn't going away. It may kind of get on the back burner for a while, and it makes me wonder, you know, will the FOIA request, the Freedom of Information request, come in? I mean, there's been some already for more information concerning this. But she may be elected to the White House before those FOIA requests are ever made good upon.
Really, and it also comes down to whether or not she signed, I guess, the separation agreement that everybody has to sign when they leave the Department of State, saying they've turned everything over as far as electronically. And then you have the issue that a lot of people have pointed out, that apparently she fired an ambassador for having a personal email account.
What happened was that this ambassador was the ambassador to Kenya around 2011 time frame, and there was an inspector general's report that was going to come out on this ambassador that was pretty negative. And one of the things that was going to be mentioned in this report is that, yeah, he used a private email address. And he actually stepped down before he could be fired, before this inspector general's report came out that did have that information about him using a private email. So, yeah, I mean, it was part of it. And certainly this is a matter everyone can agree that she was basically doing the whole do as I say, not as I do routine. And people, that doesn't resonate with people. It doesn't sit with people very well. People don't like hypocrisy in general.
Well, the issue that has been debated, whether here or elsewhere, you know, people are trying to confuse Jeb Bush. There's a difference between, they said he got out in front of it. However, there's a difference between being the governor of Florida and the Secretary of State, especially when you're talking about federal guidelines and regulations. And there's a difference when Colin Powell was in office, or Condoleezza Rice and Hillary Clinton.
Well, I don't know about as far as legalities, but certainly as policy is concerned. I mean, I've done some pretty thorough research on this. As far as the law is concerned, when she was Secretary of State, it wasn't illegal to have a private email address. It was against policy, though, and people don't like that. The law changed in 2014, and now that would be viewed as illegal. So you have the law and different laws that could be broken. I mean, that one could be put to bed. But you're looking at this issue of whether or not she signed that form. in which she would indicate, as she left the State Department, that she would have turned over all of her government-related emails, memos, all that kind of information that's considered government property, not the property of the employee. But you know what? There's been a Freedom of Information Act request on that one, too, and I don't know how long it'll be to get that.
Well, and it all goes to the narrative of, isn't this the 1990s all over again?
Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, this one idea is, are they stuck in the 90s? And with her considering running for president, can she relate to a millennial? When she's saying things like, well, you know, I didn't want to carry more than one device, a millennial scratching her head and going, well, you know, all you have to do is just add the emails on the phone. So she needs to be able to appeal to a younger voter, and some of these voters, she may be out of touch with them if she doesn't really get it. If she's not real tech savvy, that's one thing I guess, you know, the Obama administration has done maybe better than others before. They've really used social media in a way that other administrations have not done before.
The heck with the young people. I'm all about the old people.
Well, I think most politicians would want to get as many votes as they can.
Rachel Sutherland, I'm glad one of us did some research this morning.
All right, Kevin.
Have a good day.
You too.
8:31, Kevin Miller in the morning, live from Boise State at 580 KIDO.
Promote our schools. Secure our future. Brought to you by CapEd Credit Union and Chick-fil-A. Now, back to Kevin Miller at Boise State University on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
And joining us now is the Vice President for Advancement, Laura Simic, at Boise State. Good morning, ma'am.
Good morning, Kevin.
You know, one of the issues we've discussed for a long time, and we deal with parents and grandparents that are so concerned about their kids' future, their students' future, is the idea of dealing with student debt. Certainly, we want to make sure that you get a valuable education, but having the tools you need to pay for it, I know that's a big interest of you here at Boise State.
It is, Kevin. And right now, about 75% of Boise State students are on some form of financial aid. And what we want to do is make sure that our students are getting as much non-loan financial aid as they can, the kind of aid that they don't have to pay back. So right now, we're in a campaign to raise scholarship money for our students. That campaign's called Extraordinary Times, Extraordinary Opportunities. And it's really about three things. It's about making a Boise State education as affordable and accessible as possible to students. And again, that is all about providing our students with scholarship aid, non-loan aid that they don't have to pay back. It's also about helping us recruit students, recruit a diverse student body with aid that they don't have to pay back. And it's also about helping our students stay in school and graduate so that we can continue to support them with scholarship aid once they get here and support them throughout their 4 or 5 years here and make sure that they graduate on time and are not accumulating debt beyond getting their degrees.
How big of a concern is it when we talk about this generation, heck, really every generation, the dreaded student loans? It's great when you're young, not so great when you have to pick between paying off your house and paying off your student loan debt, because there is no debt forgiveness for that.
That's right, Kevin. That's right. And the way that we think we can help alleviate that is by providing our students with financial aid that's in the form of scholarships. Scholarships are great. They're funded by donors and alumni, and it is aid that is not taxable, and it's aid that students don't have to pay back. And so we're in a campaign that's $25 million right now. Like I said, Boise State awards a lot of financial aid to about 75% of our students. But right now, most of that aid is in the form of loans. We award somewhere in the neighborhood of about $145 million in aid every year, but only about $24 million of that is in the form of scholarships. Our $25 million campaign is trying to take a bite out of that. What we want to do is raise $25 million between now and 2017 so that we can provide students with more financial aid that they don't have to pay back. We know that somewhere in the neighborhood of a $5,000 scholarship is a tipping point for students who decide whether or not they'll come to Boise State or whether or not they can attend college at all. So we want to be able to build our resources to be able to provide students with that size of a scholarship and to be able to support them throughout their 4 years here so that we can recruit those kind of students and make sure that they're not growing graduating with a lot of debt.
There, it must be a challenge. It's a challenge for any public institution to find a way to pay for the expansion, for the classrooms, for the professors. But at Boise State, you know, again, it's almost like new money, if you will, speaking comparatively to other universities. People are enthusiastic. They're fired up. But Boise State doesn't have the huge, expansive alumni base that other colleges do. How do you overcome that?
You're right, Kevin. We're a young institution, and so we don't have hundreds of years of tradition of alumni giving. And what we simply have had to do is tap into the loyalty of our alumni, as well as the excitement about our growth, of our culture of innovation, and also of the dynamism that's going on here. Folks are excited about what's happening at Boise State. Folks are excited about how quickly we're able to respond to community needs. Folks are excited about how quickly we're growing and how quickly we are able to develop new programs that respond to industry, that respond to community needs, and that respond to what our students want to come to Boise State and study. And so we've been able to tap into some of that excitement and enthusiasm and generate some alumni and donor support. Now, I'll tell you, we're not where those institutions are.
Right.
They have been raising money from alumni for decades or 100 years in some cases. And so we've got a lot of room for growth. But Boise State alumni are loyal. We're starting to build that donor base from our alumni and from the community as well. Lots of non-alumni donors. And we'll get there. We'll get there.
Right.
We're making great strides. But you're right. It is a challenge, but a challenge that all growing and young institutions face.
You know, it's amazing when you think of just the Boise State brand.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to go beyond athletics. You know, when people travel, they wear Boise State gear. In
mm-hmm.
fact, we had a couple of folks that were on a mission to have an orphanage in Haiti. I don't know if you recall that a few years ago, that were detained by the Haiti officials. And you had a guy with a Boise State shirt on. Where do you think that is? You know, why do you think folks that, you know, they haven't attended here, but they live here, feel such an attachment that they wear their traveling gear, which is the blue and orange? Where do you think that comes from?
You know, there are several reasons. Athletics is often the window through which people see the university for the first time. And for us, that's been tremendously positive. It really has propelled our brand to a national stage. And the example you just gave is even an international stage.
Sure.
It's been very positive for us to have that window. And I think in Boise, we have garnered a great deal of loyalty for several reasons. One reason is because the size of Boise, and because we are in relative isolation here. We don't have another big city really close to us. So we're a big show in town.
Right.
And so we provide a lot of services and entertainment and other things for the community. So the community tends to rally around Boise State. The other reason is that because we don't have professional sports other than the Stampede and some other things that do play a very important role in the community, folks do rally around Boise State sports. And so, again, that propels our brand beyond what one would have in a larger city where one is competing with multiple universities, where one is competing with multiple other sports venues, where one is competing with other like kinds of things. We tend to benefit from the fact that we are the largest university in this metropolitan area, and the fact that we're sitting in the state capital and sitting in the population center of the state. Folks rally around the university, and we have a great partnership with the university, or with the city and the state as well.
You know, I've often said for many years that one day someone should write a book about Boise State, and not just from the athletic perspective, but how it's all intertwined, and the motto is doing more with less. And, you know, back to the scholarship mm-hmm. program, you know, you have $25 million or $20 million or maybe $50 million one day, that's going to help a lot of kids. And, you know, based on the hard work that you and your folks are doing now, that's going to go well into the future. And again, not having the historical reservoir to pull from makes that work even more demanding and rewarding, I would imagine.
It does. It does. And Boise State has a public service mission. And because of that mission, and because we have the benefit of sitting here in the state capitol and the population center of the state, we have grown up, as you use the word intertwined, we have grown up intertwined with the city, with the state, and paralleling the growth of the city and the state as well. We were founded by community leaders and grew up with the state in parallel with the city as well, and have always held that public service mission at our forefront. And I have got to give a lot of credit to our current president, Bob Kustra, who has always looked outward and said, how can we help? How can we be of service to the state and to the city? And so when we look forward and say, okay, how can we then create partnerships that will result in investment that will help advance the mission of Boise State, the community has been very responsive to us.
Right.
And that is really helping propel this scholarship campaign forward. It's a four-year campaign. We're halfway through, and we're sitting at about $14 million. Now, we've still got 2 years to go, and we clearly want to be able to meet our goal, if not exceed our goal. That $25 million won't meet the needs of all of our students, but it'll help take a bite out of it. And we know that as we go forward, if we want to continue to be able to recruit the best and the brightest students, as well as those students who really need the assistance to go to school, we're going to have to continue raising money for scholarships.
I'm with you. Let me get you out on this one. How big was it when the president came here?
You know, that predates me, but what I have gathered and what I have heard as I've been visiting with alumni and donors of the university is this university has always had the right leadership at the right time, and what Bob Kustra was able to do was really propel the university to the next level and create a sense of expansion, a sense of dynamism, a sense of...
But you get the sense of credibility. I mean...
Absolutely.
With the president, whether you agree with him or not, and to me it was just a way to highlight this institution.
Absolutely, absolutely. As a sense of really moving forward quickly, being nimble and responsive to our community, and really fulfilling that public service mission as well.
Well, good luck. Is there a website, or if people want more information?
There is, absolutely. The easiest way to find more information is to simply go to the Boise State homepage, and you'll see a big menu choice right in the upper right-hand corner that says Giving. Click on that, and you'll find all the information you need.
And bring your credit card.
Thank you, Kevin.
Laura, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
850, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Time for traffic now.
Promote our schools. Secure our future. Brought to you by CapEd Credit Union and Chick-fil-A. Now, back to Kevin Miller at Boise State University on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
And here we are. It is 8:56, Kevin Miller in the morning. Phone numbers 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And again, most people are probably testifying right now at the gun hearing on HB 243. We've been hearing from you throughout the morning on that. In addition to that, this deal with Iran, did the Senate go out of line by writing the mullahs and saying it doesn't really matter what the president says based on the fact that we have to approve any treaty? John Kerry had this to say, and he was not happy.
Nothing in our deliberations is decided until everything is decided. And the purpose of these negotiations is not just to get any deal. It is to get the right deal.
That's what the administration has been saying. But if you take a look at the proliferation of the nuclear centrifuges and everything else, and look, as we've learned today at Boise State, I'm certainly not a nuclear scientist. However, they've grown quite a bit but the Secretary of State is upset over the Senate's letter.
This letter was absolutely calculated directly to interfere with these negotiations.
Apparently.
Not on your life. I'm not going to apologize for the for an unconstitutional and unthought-out action by somebody who's been in the United States Senate for 60-some days.
Apparently, the Secretary of State has an issue with the Senate exerting its authority. I think the problem for the administration is they have run wild, and we've had our own constitutional experts in expanding, clarify this for us at 580KIDO, in expanding the power of the executive. And now the legislative branch, a co-equal branch of government, has decided to shoot back. Here's Mitch McConnell.
We don't think he ought to make a bad deal with one of the worst.
And Kevin Miller here at 580KIDO, wishing you a good day. God bless. Thank you all for listening. Keep the faith. Idaho.